Well, a very pleasant, good middle of the week. Some people still call it hump day. It is Wednesday, December 3rd, 2025. Welcome in to Focus. And yes, I am Paul W. Smith with the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski. And before you know it, you soon may be able to watch the show from start to stop, just as you're able to listen to the show. So I don't know how close we are to that, Mike, but we did get the thumbs up from our boss, Ann Thomas. Do you have any idea where we are on that?
No, but I will ask her. I would say by the beginning of the year, if not sooner.
Okay. Is there any particular reason why it would take that long, since we can see each other now on camera?
I want to gussy up the aesthetic a little bit, but
yeah. All right.
But we are posting video clips daily, including the other day when we surprised you with the key to the city.
Oh, you did? And I never saw that. I would love to see that video. People have told me they've seen it. I don't know how to see it. I didn't see it.
I'll send it to you. We actually got a different angle we're posting later today, too, of you actually.
I saw one thing where the mayor was presenting me the key, and there was a microphone in my face the entire time.
Right.
And I went, couldn't somebody tell me just to move to the left or right or come in and move the microphone? I was like, I was seriously behind the microphone.
You know what? It was all a blur.
It was all a blur. And then yesterday was a celebratory day. And now today, it seems like this is the official start of the week for the show. You know that today is Let's Hug Day.
Oh, boy.
Are you a hugger? Because I am a hugger.
You are a hugger. I'm not a big hugger. I mean, if I'm offered a hug, I'll reciprocate. But I don't know. I've never been a hugger myself.
I see that in mostly men, but I do see it in other people. But
yeah, I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable if I offer them an unwanted hug.
Well, and for those of us who are huggers, we could never even imagine it ever being an uncomfortable thing, but it is. In fact, I used to hug with abandon, but the way things have gotten in the world, you now kind of have to. Unless it's just a big celebration all at once and it's spontaneous, you kind of have to ask, can I hug you?
Right.
And I've hugged men who stiffen up like a board. And my grandpa Harry, who lived to be 100, he was a loving man, but he was, you know, German, and he was all these things. And they apparently didn't do a lot of hugging when he was growing up. But I would hug him, and he'd get stiff. But in the end, he loved the hugs. And the kisses. You know, I'm not a kisser on the lips kind of guy.
You're a cheek kisser.
I am a cheek kisser.
We've got pictures from the past 2 weeks of you kissing, of Mike Bouchard giving you a kiss on the cheek at Hunger Free in the D. And then there's you giving Mayor Duggan a big old smooch on the cheek after he gave you.
I don't think he was terribly comfortable with that, but he's known me long enough that he knows it's coming. But, you know, for the hugs. And today is Hug Day. It increases immunity, helps you fight against viral and bacterial ailments, even though in the age of COVID, people probably think they're going to get COVID when someone moves in on a hug. It shows that people who receive regular hugs have lower heart rates and blood pressure compared to those people who aren't getting hugs. Good for babies, good for children. You get all those great hormones. And hugging someone, or interestingly enough, hugging something like when we're little and we hug that teddy bear or we hug our doll whatever, it helps reduce fears that you might have. And that hugging releases the serotonin and all those good vibes, and they're great hormones that make you feel happier overall. So I'll ask now, because I honestly don't, Danielle, I haven't had a chance to hug you that much, but are you a hugger or do you like hugs?
I'm a hugger.
Good for you.
I hug.
I think hugging is good.
It's really fun to hug Dave because he does not reciprocate. He just...
Oh, I know. I
he goes
Dave.
Like this.
I hugged Dave the other day, and he turtles.
Yeah,
he
kind of, that's exactly just, what yeah. he does. You're doing yeah, he, it.
That's why I'm Dave's favorite, because I don't hug him.
I love Dave. Dave is a great guy. Dave called me this morning because he knew I was having troubles with my phone. What a surprise. Paul's having trouble with electronics. But anyway, he called because he did research to figure it out, to help me and to fix it. And I said to him, well, amazingly, because I was out at Capitol Grill for the station event, I actually went into that very scary store known as Apple.
Oof.
I went into the Apple store.
You mean the lounge? The Apple Lounge.
I think of it as the Apple Lion's Den.
The Apple Dungeon.
They've made it very comfortable looking, but it's just, there's too much going on. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the ADHD, but there's so many people and everybody, and I'm certain that everybody knows more about their phone or their computer than I do, which is probably true. And I had to get some help. And I said, I don't have an appointment. I don't want to see a genius. I am sure that any one of you kids can fix these two problems. Go talk to that man. And he set me up. He goes, okay, I'm taking the lineup for the genius. I went, oh, no, not the geniuses. So there was only one person in front of me, so they did it, and they fixed it, and good. Thank God. There's still a million things wrong with my computer, but the idea of making an appointment and taking my computer in and trying to figure all that out, it's overwhelming. Just overwhelming.
And they need to not be doing so much with these updates on the Apple phone because, people have their iPhones set up the way they like them, and then they do these updates, and you got all these new features you didn't ask for.
Yeah, that's what the two problems on my phone were, was from the last download of the new software. It gave me two things that they didn't tell me they were giving me, and it screwed me up, and
right.
I didn't want them. Like, one thing that's going to see, it's going to check, anybody who calls me is going to check their name and check to see why they're calling. I don't have time for that, to wait to see, do they approve it or not? I want to approve it or not.
And in my line of work, I don't like the thought of that feature either.
Well, because we have strangers calling us all the time for the show.
Right.
So we got rid of that. And what was the other one?
You were getting some kind of closed captioning on FaceTime.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for remembering. Every time Kim and I would FaceTime, everything she was saying was closed captioned on my screen, which, maybe one day I'll need that, but right now I don't.
Right.
And it cuts off half the screen. So I don't like talking to my beautiful wife seeing half of her head.
Right.
Or neck down.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of quick notes here. I have always said the rules of war are ridiculous. Now, I know they're not overall, but the idea that we have specific rules on how we can kill someone is just a bit much for me. For example, do you know that if whatever they're sending these strikes down to the carriers of the drugs, the drug carrier boats?
Yeah.
They're like from a drone or something. We're nowhere. We're not within thousands of miles of those people. Like, we're going to go down and rescue whoever's not dead. The fact of the matter is, the way they could get around this is, don't send one missile, send two. No one's going to survive two. And if you send two missiles and kill everyone, no one's going to complain. They're only complaining that when the smoke cleared, there were two guys hanging on to the edge of the boat, and they sent another missile and took them out. If they had sent two missiles at the same time, no one would be complaining. These are the things that are too much for me, the rules of war. There should be no killing at all. But if you're going to kill, don't have these ridiculous rules on how you can kill someone or not kill someone, because in the end, America has always been the only country that followed those rules of war. Ask anybody who was in World War II or Korea or Vietnam how many times they knew of guys that were captured and killed on the spot. Because the enemy said, what are we going to do with these guys? We have to feed them? We have to carry them around with us? No, they killed them. All right, enough of this. One other quick thing. I'm not going to give him any credit, but a New Zealand man has been charged for theft after he allegedly stole a diamond-studded locket, one of these Fabergé eggs we always hear about but never really see.
Right.
It was valued at over $19,000, and he swallowed it.
Ugh.
So it went in worth about $19,000, and when hours later it came out, I figured they could get $150.
Yeah, it definitely hurts the resale value.
No, never mind. I don't want to buy it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Do you have any others?
Put that microscope away. Don't look at it.
The Fabergé egg named the Octo Egg, set with diamonds and sapphires. You open it up, and there's an 18-karat gold miniature octopus in there. So the guy was charged with stealing that, and he, just for the heck of it, apparently picked up an iPad from the same store.
Couldn't swallow that.
Yeah, that one was hard. That one was very hard to swallow.
I mean, he's all lucky, right? He passed it. I mean, it could have killed him, probably.
Well, and imagine passing the iPad. But anyway, I'm glad you went right to the point there. Yeah, he could have been killed by that doggone Fabergé egg.
Right.
All right, well, enough of the fun. We're still going to try to have relentless positive radio for you on your way to making each and every day count because, as you know, each day is a gift, and be aware of the QTR, quality time remaining, as Kim would remind us. And I do want to thank you for being an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. How about this? No income tax? In Florida, they have no state tax. The president actually floated the idea, and we're taking in trillions of dollars. So, wouldn't that be incredible that, in fact, when the government actually gets lots of money in, we actually benefit from that? It's never happened before. And then the $1,000 from the government for kids when they're born, and $250 more from the Dell family for to kids that are beyond the ages they're talking about. This is, if all of us would have learned the power of compounding interest and putting $10 away every week when we were mowing lawns and doing all the things I was doing, working in radio and at the Holiday Inn and mowing lawns and going to high school, we'd be multi-millionaires today, but no one told us, and they're still not teaching it in school. But now we're going to see that happen because of this government program and because of the largesse of the Dell family giving $6 billion. And that will spur other billionaires to step forward. And we could make our country one of the wealthiest countries in the world, like we read about Dubai, where they don't have to pay taxes and they all get checks and all of that stuff, or other places like that. Why shouldn't we be able to do that? We are the most capable country in the world. Why shouldn't we be able to do that? What the heck? We can dream. 1217 with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Ooh, I like that. A little singing from Danielle Mason. But I found that when you go online to see these things, and I think you're hearing the theme, and I'm going, whoa, that's great. Oh, you can't even hear the music. Is there no way we can get around that, Mr. Parsons? Is he on the phone?
I'll answer that question for you.
What was the question?
All right, Danielle,
Dave came in asking if we got a hug.
Oh. Well, that's a... And here's the answer.
About no music?
We don't have licensing for the online portion of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate. I mean, we don't play a lot of music, but, you know, when the theme is playing and all of that, I feel bad that people listening in online or on the... if they go, we like it when you stream us live, but we like it when you go to the podcast at WJR.com and listen whenever you can. But you won't hear any music, as it turns out. Okay, it's a rule. I understand. As a rule, Caitlin Buss is a fabulous guest and a fabulous co-host. She did a great job with her husband. I'm trying to twist their arms into doing a podcast. I think it would be spectacular. And I think they should do it from their kitchen. And if their little kids are running around, that makes it even better. Caitlin, I do have a contact person for you to talk to help you get that set up.
Okay. Well, we'll have them over. They can become part of the family. We don't have any licensing restrictions on the kids' screams, so
that's
be good
beautiful.
Paul, am I that contact person? Are you volunteering?
You, Dave Rieger, and of course, Ray Templin. The three of you can help these people get set up to do a podcast, and I hope you will.
Sure, just let us know when.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
That's all good news. All right, Caitlin Buss, her regular job is deputy editorial page editor for the Detroit News. She does a tremendous job with it. President Trump threatens to withhold SNAP benefits from states that don't turn over data. I got more on that. It says why it matters. More than a dozen Democrat-led states have been threatened by President Donald Trump's administration with losing federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, funding if they do not provide data about people receiving assistance. Does this presuppose, then, Caitlin, that there are no Republican-led states that have withheld this information?
I think it does. I think a good chunk of them, reading through the list, it seems like, have. I think this is mostly Democratic attorneys general, that have filed these lawsuits. This is a hard one. I understand the concern about fraud and making sure this is going to the right people, and I don't think that SNAP should be treated as, you know, a sacred cow necessarily. There are human errors in that program. But this also comes off as somewhat punitive. Obviously, this is, you know, nothing new for the Trump administration, and just kind of points to the fact that we rely too much on federal dollars generally. There are, you know, too many strings attached. It hampers our own independence. So that's kind of where I fall on this. You know, I don't love how Dana Nessel has dealt with the Trump administration necessarily. But I don't also love how the Trump administration is kind of holding this over them. So, there's a little bit of bad on both sides.
you shoot me down on this one, because I generally am in lockstep with you because you're brilliant. You went to Hillsdale, a school that I greatly admire and understand how conservative they are. And that's one of the reasons I greatly admire them. And we've been there and broadcast from there, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I see nothing wrong at all with knowing exactly where my money is going. Over the years, maybe not so much anymore, but over the years, I've paid a tremendous amount in federal income taxes. And I am presuming that SNAP money is funded by us, the American people, who pay their taxes. So I see nothing wrong with trying to find out where the money's going. You and I can't go to the government and say, you know what, I could use $100,000. Can I just have it?
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. And I think if maybe there was a more surgical way to get that information that didn't cause such a backlash PR-wise, that would be great. So I don't think you're wrong on the principle at all. I think we should know. I think we should know where the fraud's going and make sure that the eligible people are getting what they deserve.
I don't think it should be used against people, and we would be all over that if that would happen. If you could bring the music down, Danielle, I know you're doing exactly what you're supposed to, but I need a little more time with Caitlin. And that is, I was cheering when I read your column on protecting kids from the social media cesspool. This social media has become a cesspool. I mean, we got kids out there following some latest TikTok challenge, trying to kick in people's doors. Talk about a great way to get shot dead.
It's terrible. And I have enough of it in my house, and I consider myself actually pretty strict about this kind of stuff. But if it's impacting me and my children, and we know it's impacting people who use it a lot more, look, the lawsuits keep coming on this too. And there are predators on these sites. Information's being manipulated. I'm all about the protections we can put on these sites if we can.
And we must. Mm-hmm. It should go without saying, but apparently it does not.
It's going to be hard. You know, it's so widespread. Like 70% of Americans are on this, you know, all day. So there's a lot for adults to do in leading that behavior, but it's going to be really important for everyone to try and change course.
Well put, as always, Caitlin Buss, deputy editorial page editor for the Detroit News, a frequent fill-in on this very program, we're proud to say, frequent guest, and soon I hope I'll be able to announce the fabulous podcast coming from their kitchen.
All right, Paul. Always great to be with you. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you much as we continue in focus at 12:30 on WJR. Well, Monday, I was about to introduce Evan Brown when I got hoodwinked and in the nicest of ways when they surprised me and Mayor Mike Duggan showed up and presented me with the key to the city. I was overwhelmed, but I also was disappointed because I was looking forward to speaking to Evan Brown, who was used. They used you, Evan, to divert my attention.
my name was taken in vain. But at least it was for a good cause.
It turned out to be.
Congratulations to you. Congratulations. Mazel tov, as we say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was for a good cause. Eben, of course, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, for real this time. It even said so on my rundown. There's been a lot of discussion on with the president and with Hegseth addressing that boat strike in September. The president's been talking about immigration during his cabinet meeting yesterday. His cabinet meetings are very unusual. It's almost uncomfortable that everyone feels they have to start off with whatever their report is, explaining why it's all good because of the president. We understand that. He chose you. You're a cabinet member. Now, let's talk about what you're doing with your job. But be that as it may, they are doing what they need to do to survive. And those of us who've known Donald Trump for 40 years fully understand that. But let's get back to this. You know what I asked, Eben, and you're much brighter than me about these things. There's a good way to get out of this problem of finding out there are two guys hanging onto a boat and sending another missile, like there are rules in war. But here's one rule. If they sent two missiles at once, I can pretty much guarantee you there wouldn't be anybody hanging onto the side of the boat, and we wouldn't be talking about this today, would we?
Well, perhaps. I mean, I don't know the mechanics of the missiles that were used, so I can't tell you if, you know, about that, the technical aspects of it. The consternation is coming from whether or not a second strike as a follow-up was somehow improper or illegal somehow. And some of the people who obviously just don't like President Trump and don't like Secretary of War Pete Hegseth have called this a war crime. And I highly doubt that this is a war crime. A war crime is something that people do when they commit mass atrocities against civilians who are not enemy combatants. What Hamas did on October 7th was perhaps a war crime.
Right. I haven't heard them yelling about that.
Right. Slobodan Milosevic was on trial for war crimes. And this is not a war crime. There was some other talk about this being a violation of international law, which is a silly, toothless concept. Because international law is not fairly and equitably applied practically anywhere. The arbiters of said law are The Hague, which is the most extreme version of a kangaroo court as I've ever seen.
I love you.
And we don't subject our American citizens or American warriors or American leaders to judgment at The Hague, because why should we subjugate our rights and our strength as Americans to this ridiculous court on the other side of the planet, which is so politically occupied with pursuing people they don't like, as opposed to people who have actually done something wrong that could be demonstrably and unequivocally explained. So that's one thing. Now, did we violate our own U.S. law? Did we violate Pentagon policy? Well, that's a question that you can certainly ask. I tend to think we did not, probably because there are teams of lawyers that are always involved in the planning of these operations and that they're available as the operation unfolds to answer questions. Can we do this? Are we on the law side if we proceed this way? So I think it's probably unlikely that anyone did anything illegal, at least not intentionally. Now, certainly you're in the fog of war. Maybe a decision is made and maybe it's not on the up and up. But that doesn't indicate an intention to do something poorly or a negligence in any kind of way. It just didn't turn out right, because we're dealing with war. Things don't always go smoothly. And I'm going to say it again. We are dealing with war. Up until now, the U.S. policy with regard to drug trafficking has to treat things as a law enforcement matter. That has changed under this president. We have declared these people to be foreign terrorists, and we are pursuing them as enemy combatants.
And I believe he has the legal right to do that.
Well, we spent the past 20-some-odd years creating this doctrine in that we pursued terrorists as enemy combatants, didn't we, on the other side of the planet? And we did not capture them with the intention of trying them in U.S. Courtrooms where you or I would be tried had we done something wrong. But we don't do things wrong, so we're not going to be tried for anything. In fact, you've got the key to the city. How could you get tried for anything? So anyhow, the point being is that some years ago, another American president used a drone strike to kill an American citizen overseas who had been plotting and inspiring terrorists. His name was Anwar al-Awlaki. He had no trial. He had no indictment or anything of the sort. But no one seemed to have a problem with that.
The politics is just, it's nauseating. Quick note, this president has a tendency to overdo things. And now he says he doesn't want any Somalis in the U.S. So you know he's going to get attacked for that. And it's hard not to attack him when he makes such broad general statements about an entire people. I don't know where we go from here.
Me neither. I guess that's a Minneapolis question, but maybe it's also a Dearborn question. That's in your listening area, isn't it?
Oh, you're right about that. Always doing a great job. Evan Brown, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. Thank you, Evan, so very much. God bless.
You're welcome. Take care.
1244 at 760, WJR. I always look forward to this this moment because I mentioned Zach Ahe, and he was at Michigan, like Sophie. And then there's the great products that are turned out at Michigan State University. And one of them happens to be working here at WJR. He started working here before he graduated Michigan State, but proudly did. He was involved in sports there. He's now involved in sports here. And he does a tremendous job. He's our WJR digital sports reporter and more. He's Nick Lundberg. Nicky, always a pleasure, my friend, and there's a lot going on at your school.
Yes, thank you for the introduction, Paul. When you were talking about Zach, I was like, oh, I know that guy. So it's cool to, you know, be, you know, talked about with him and with you, and it's just great to be here.
Well, you know what? It proves that Michigan and Michigan State people can really get along very well, and well we should, except for maybe that one or two days a year, whether it's the basketball team or the football team and whatever. And that's to be expected. But be that as it may, Pat Fitzgerald apparently spoke to 8 different schools about potentially coaching their football teams before he chose Michigan State to resume his career. Tell us what you know.
Yeah, he was a pretty highly coveted coach coming into this cycle. There's obviously a lot of, you know, different positions opening up, especially this year. And a couple of the schools that were, you know, named of interest for him were Florida and Penn State. So those two names alone should just tell you that, you know, this guy was pretty coveted. Obviously, he's from the Midwest. He's from the Big Ten. Did some good things at Northwestern. Wasn't coaching for a couple of years, was cleared of those hazing allegations he had a couple years ago, so he's got a clean slate right now. His contract, comparatively to other coaches in the Big Ten, is rather small with, you know, a lot of incentives booked in there. If he gets to 7-8 wins in his first couple years, that number could, you know, reach into the top 30, top 40 mark in the nation. So there's a lot of things to like about this hire, especially coming at a time where the past two Michigan State coaches, you know, have, you know, swung in different ways the pendulum of culture, the ways they want to build a team. And it just seems like Fitzgerald is taking over that Mark D'Antonio mold of, you know, Midwest talent based on, you know, good defensive football. The offense, depending on who they hire for coordinators, will figure itself out. But Michigan State has always been known of that defensive style of brand of football. And it seems like Fitzgerald is bringing that back to East Lansing.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nick Lundberg, if he can fall within that Mark D'Antonio mold, people will be very, very happy. Let's face it. And it seems as though people will complain about the money and all of that. It's not Jonathan Smith's fault. Somebody signed that contract and guaranteed it. But it does appear, too, that they're not blaming Jonathan Smith the way sometimes coaches get blamed when they get broomed after a bad season. They're saying that he kind of got a raw deal and didn't know everything coming in and was left with a lot of mistakes and problems from the last administration, I guess.
Yeah, definitely seemed like that, especially when you're coming off of all the things that happened with Mel Tucker and how, you know, the NCAA, they decided to self-report those, you know, cheating allegations to the NCAA, which ultimately ended up in probation and vacating of wins. And so Jonathan Smith from the start, and he's from the West Coast, so it's harder for him.
We're out of time here. You know what that's like.
The
great
exactly.
Nick Lundberg, proud MSU grad, WJR digital sports reporter. Stay with us. So glad we're together here Monday through Friday from noon to 2. If you can listen to us live, we love that, of course. You can stream us. You can listen at 760 on the AM dial or stream us at WJR.com. And if you're not available between noon and 2, you can listen to us at any time at your convenience. And it does matter to us a lot if you show up as a listener by going to WJR.com and listening to the podcast. We greatly appreciate that. The team works hard helping me every day. Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski with our WJR Traffic and Weather First doing all the heavy lifting. And I greatly appreciate them as we work together to give you relentless positive radio on your way to making each and every day count. Each day is a gift. And don't forget the QTR that Kim has reminded us about. Quality time remaining. QTR. We don't know how much we have. And thanks for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. I had somebody write to me saying, they miss me saying, go on out and make it a great rest of the day. But I used to say that when I'd get off at 9 in the morning. So I was asking you to just remember to go on out and make it a great rest of the day. By now, heck, it's 1:06.
Maybe salvage the rest of the day.
Yeah, go ahead and still try to make it the best rest of the day that you possibly can. And you are by being with us. So that's certainly the good news. A couple of quick notes here. After a year-long transformation, the Michigan Science Center, or MISI, will reopen its fully renovated and upgraded planetarium theater on Friday, December 12th, marking a major milestone in the institution's multi-year hyperspace initiative to reimagine space science education for Detroit and more and beyond. And so I just wanted to make that comment to give them a little thumbs up, because I don't think enough people take advantage of the Michigan Science Center.
It's a great spot, too.
It is a great spot. You know, it's just one of those things. And our friend, the former ambassador, Ron, I think he stepped in quietly and helped rescue them some time ago. But that's I'll find out for sure before I go through that whole thing. But latest winter storm is heading out. I'm not asking to get it, but are we going to get hit by that winter storm?
I feel like there's just been one continual winter storm since before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but when you see the news, you see people getting it way worse than us. I'm not complaining.
Well, and it was weird. Was it overnight Friday or Saturday that we were supposed to get a whole bunch of snow? And where I was in Lincoln Park, I looked out my window, and there was barely enough to shovel. And then I turn on the news, and they're like, oh, we've got 5 to 6 inches. I don't know if I was going crazy or if I was just in a spot that got off easy, but...
Well, let's ask somebody who would really know, because she sits next to you each day. Danielle, has he been going crazy?
Yes, ever since I met him. Slowly but surely, he's going nuts.
I didn't start going crazy till I met you, Danielle.
Yep, but you've been going slow, so.
Yeah. There's a lot of finger pointing going on here.
Did you guys get a lot of snow where you were over the weekend? I didn't get a ton.
I have still snow on the ground at my house.
Yeah,
but it's not a lot, thank goodness.
Right.
I'm not asking for it, but I can tell you my good friends Joe Backer at Backer Landscaping, the best in the country, they did somehow without me even noticing it. I just noticed it. They put these orange posts in the ground that outline where the driveway is if they have to come in when there's deep snow. So they would only do that.
Yeah.
If they thought there might be deep snow in our future.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it still is very early in December, and the snow did come earlier than normal. You know, I feel like we've had more green and gray Christmases lately than white Christmases, but yeah, I feel like where I was in the Downriver community, I didn't get as much as we thought.
Which is... Yeah, I'm glad they have the snow where it really belongs, which is up north, where people make a living based on that snow.
Right.
For skiing, for snowmobiling, for cross country, for everything.
Because they were hurting in past years where they were, it seemed like winter was just one giant march.
You know, one thing I didn't get to talk to Nicky about, his beloved Michigan State, and we all love Michigan State in our own way, but they set a $1 billion fundraising goal to upgrade their athletic facilities. What's that all about?
Yeah. A new skybox. I think it's all athletic facilities. I know the football stadium is going to be getting some. The training facility is going to be getting some. And I think the basketball arena is going to be getting some. But I know we had Guskowitz on about a big fundraising goal that they had like at the beginning of the academic year. So I don't know if this is separate or if this is tied with that.
A good question. I don't know, but we'll have somebody on to talk more about that. Sad news about Dave Coulier, who we reported some time ago had cancer, but he has a new cancer diagnosis unrelated to the previous bout. Well, I mean, they may say that, but I figure, I sadly believe once cancer's in your body, it's in your body.
Yeah. And
it shows up in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
I sadly believe.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But yeah, he beat the lymphoma. He was in remission for the lymphoma.
Right.
And he said that he credited early detection for that. And he said that this cancer, I think, on the base of his tongue, they said that they caught that early too. So
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was done with my point, but I'm with you. I mean, I feel like it's got to be related somehow, somewhere deep down.
Yeah, which is why I always thought, now maybe they've got new rules and they probably do, but with breast cancer, people would say, yeah, I didn't need radiation or chemotherapy. I always think, oh man, I think once you get it all removed, if there's just one little cancer cell left,
right,
which is why I always think the radiation or the chemo is important. You know, I don't get this, but for some reason or another, cranberries have been in the news with bad news. Like Ocean Spray was out not too long ago saying that on social media, they had people saying, I hope you don't have a spider in your cranberry sauce because those bogs are filled with spiders. And they had to fight that. Now there's a rumor saying that people, it's online that people opened their can of cranberry sauce and it was filled with water.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
My question is, how do they know to start recording when they're opening the cranberry sauce? Because what's happening.
Who just naturally opens... I mean, who just naturally starts recording the opening of a can of anything?
Right.
Unless you're planning on a problem.
Right. So that's my question.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I'm going to say you've just now made attorney status. And you didn't even have to go to school or take the exam. Good for you.
I will be joining the Flood Law Firm.
No, Todd might have something to say about that. Because he's a good, reputable, excellent attorney.
No, so. I said it on the radio, so it's true.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Patrick Anderson's a great guy, founder and CEO of the Anderson Economic Group. He is going to help us better understand this $1,000 per baby from the government and an additional $250. There's a little confusion here. The $250 is from the Dell family, Michael and Susan Dell. For those kids that don't get the $1,000, at least as I understand it. But the bottom line is, we still don't teach kids what I wish you and I would have been taught, which is even if we put 10 bucks a week away religiously, we'd be millionaires today. It's just ridiculous. We are not taught the power of compounding interest. Anyway, I'll let Patrick Anderson, who knows what he's talking about, talk about that coming up next here. In Focus with Paul W. Smith on this beautiful gray Wednesday on WJR. Oh, this is great. I'm seeing on one of my monitors, man charged in NYU attack has 16 prior arrests. He walks up behind this young girl, this young student, and assaults her. And he's had 16 prior arrests. The judges that let him out should go to jail at the very least. He should be taken out of society whether you want to put him in jail for the rest of his life and we have to pay for that, or put him to death, I really don't care. He has shown he is not capable of living with us, breathing our air, walking our streets. And that's just 16 prior arrests. Just 16. We've had others that are 50, 60, 70 prior arrests, and the judges should be held accountable. Okay, got to get that off my chest. By the way, Mike Parsons, Kim has filled me in on a little bit more on the Ocean Spray cranberries.
Oh, okay, good.
You and I said, well, who decides to videotape opening a can of cranberries unless you're expecting to have something bad? Well, it turns out, she says, many of those folks were opening their second or third can of cranberry sauce and decided to videotape it. And she says there are hundreds of people that experienced that problem. Now, it doesn't mean that it couldn't be a hoax that hundreds of people have fallen for. I don't know that. But that's a little bit more of, as Mr. Harvey used to say, the rest of the story.
I got to be honest. I don't even know if we had cranberry sauce at my Thanksgiving.
We did. We had two different kinds. It was fabulous. Patrick Anderson, founder and CEO of the Anderson Economic Group, always makes sense of everything that's going on. And I respect you like you can't even imagine, Patrick. Happy holiday season to you.
Well, thank you, Paul W. And what an intro! I don't really have a comment on well, that last one.
I'm sorry. As I saw it up on the screen, and then on the other, I thought if I don't say this, I'm going to forget it. This is kind of the way it is for me. So it's believe me, it makes it hard to live with me. But be that as it may, can you easily describe what's going on? What is the Trump account, and who gets it?
Yeah, the Trump account is a very interesting thing that was part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And it actually is called a Trump account. That's what the IRS calls it in the law. And it's something that I think a lot of families are going to make use of. It's essentially an IRA, an individual retirement account for young children that you can set up as a parent, as a grandparent, and you can put money in, and it grows tax-free while the person is a child, and then they can use it later on. They won't start until the middle of next year, but it's still a pretty nice thing. And this is quite surprising. The Treasury is actually going to put $1,000 in for every kid whose parent or grandparent sets up account that is born next year, and I think for the next few years after that. So it definitely behooves anyone who might be having a child, might be blessed with a child or a grandchild, to be aware of this and get one of these things set up, because you're going to start off with $1,000 courtesy of the federal government.
Well, and it's very important. There's always interesting stories behind the stories with Patrick Anderson. You notice he said the Treasury is going to actually put $1,000. Well, that's because they didn't do that for Social Security. And so all of us who think that we've been paying into Social Security and our money is sitting there growing are wrong. And that's why there's this big fear about Social Security going away. But this time, they're actually going to put a real $1,000 into these accounts for kids that are born between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028. Now, the Dell family have stepped up, and I believe other billionaires will do the same. The Dell family comes in, so the children who weren't born within those parameters are going to get about $250 to children 10 and under. It says here, in certain zip codes. So that's where the Dell money is going, I guess.
Oh, that's right. There's been, I can't really identify another occasion like this where you've got the wealthy philanthropist here with the Mr. and Mrs. Dell that are willing to put such money behind such a large group of people, and I'll say selflessly here. It's not like they think these kids are going to go buy computers. Right. I mean, one day they will, but this is definitely, they're going to help a lot of families that want to start saving for their kids, whether for college, for trade school, for a house, or just to get them started in adult life, do it early and do it with a tax-advantaged account like an IRA that their parents have.
We salute Michael and Susan Dell for that $6.25 billion. And I do believe, maybe you think so too, Patrick, that other billionaires will step forward if they feel they can make a difference as well. And I have to tell you, you said it, you know, the tax advantaged money, the savings tax free means everything. My 529 plans for my kids for college, they were a godsend. I started those when I was making a lot more money, and that made it possible for me to pay for their college education. It would have been harder to do later in life.
That's right. And it's actually interesting. I was reading about Michael Dell talking about when he was 12, he got a passbook savings account. I think he said he put $8 in it, and he started to watch how compound interest works.
Oh.
I got to tell you, compound interest works wonders, especially if you got a lot of years to compound it. So,
Patrick,
I agree with you.
We were not taught that when we were young. I hope and pray in school kids are being taught that now, but I fear that as we've taken away cursive writing and other things that we're not teaching them, or maybe they're coming back now, if I knew back when I was mowing lawns and working at the Holiday Inn in Monroe and working at WVMO in Monroe and in high school, if I would have saved 10, 20 bucks a week and put it into an index fund, like for the S&P 500, I'd be a multi-millionaire today. It's that easy. But we don't know it. We don't understand it. And frankly, the biggest tough thing, and maybe you'll agree, Patrick, is keeping the money there. As it grows, you look at that money and you go, wow, I could really use that. No, you can't use it. Pretend you don't have it. Let it keep growing tax-free. Let the compounding interest save your life when you need it after your 60s. And I would guess, Patrick, I don't know, you've done studies. You might have to be a millionaire to have a just normal life in 40 years, 50 years.
If inflation keeps going the way it was several years ago, just a few years ago. So good advice, Paul W., and definitely for anybody that is a parent, might be a parent, is thinking about being a parent, or is a grandparent, I'd definitely be thinking about one of these in 2026.
Well, God bless you. Anything else before we let you go, Patrick? We always love having you on.
No. Oh, thank you, Paul W. And yeah, what a great thing. Like, mow lawns, learn about compound interest, and start saving. There we go.
God bless you. I used to get $3 a lawn. That's how old I am, Patrick. But even that $3 a lawn, that would have meant something. And it does today when kids do it, and they're getting more than $3. God bless you, Patrick. Have a great holiday season. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Have a great Christmas ahead of you.
A great Christmas to you too, Patrick Anderson. Founder, CEO, all-round good guy of the Anderson Economic Group. Here with Paul W. Smith at 129 on WJR. So great being with you, and great introducing these great guests that we get. Thank you, Mike Parsons, for the hard work. Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, WJR Traffic and Weather First. The team here to please you with relentless positive radio the best we can while you're on your way to making each and every day count, each day being a gift. You're paying attention to the QTR, quality time remaining, and I want to thank you for making the effort to choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. We do appreciate you. That's why we're here and working so hard. And we get to bring you great guests like Peter Meyer, former congressman and Army veteran. Peter, always a pleasure. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. A pleasure to be on.
We have you talking about a few things, and one of them would be, we've been seeing on camera, in fact, I see on one of the monitors right now, U.S.-Russia peace talks end without compromises, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And there I see Putin sitting across from Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, and one of the late-night hosts actually was pretty spot on when he said, you know, it looked like Putin was ready to eat them. And as I look at the video again, I'm going, geez, you know, they kind of got that right. Putin is sitting there with kind of a smirk on his face. And I wouldn't have been surprised if at any moment he reached across the table and started eating our guys.
I know he has not moved an inch from his positions. I mean, I give the Trump team a lot of credit for, you know, exploring the art of the possible. You know, if there's any chance of ending this war on terms that make sense. be a shame not to pursue it, given the fatalities, given the ongoing bloodshed, and just the devastation that it has wrought. You know, at the same time, like, it is very clear that Putin, you know, he's not looking to make an iota of concessions. And any small concessions that he may make in terms of, you know, territory that the Russian occupying forces currently hold, you know, it seems he wants tenfold in return. Again, I give them credit for trying. It was worth exploring. But ultimately, at the end of the day, Putin is not somebody you can actually negotiate with. He's somebody who wants to lock in gains as opposed to moving towards anything that may be productive over the long term.
And I think, Peter Meyer, the other point being that's kind of implied in what you're saying, it's very difficult to negotiate with someone who has nothing to lose. He has an endless supply of North Korean fodder, of bodies, to take the pressure off from his Russian people and send them wave after wave to be killed constantly. And that's not true for Ukraine.
No, but I push back on the fact that Putin does have something to lose. You know, he could lose power, he could lose prestige. If it is all looks like his invincible image that he has cultivated amongst the Russian people, if there is any perception, you know, that there is a chink in the armor, that there is a weakening of that, that could be incredibly perilous to him, to his power, and to his life.
Well, that's why I'm saying this. If he doesn't budge. If he sticks with the same, three pillars that he's never hidden his hardline demands, if he sticks with that, he's not going to look weak to his people and lose. That's my point. Maybe I didn't make it as clear as I should have.
No, and that's well said. I think at the end of the day, what the Trump team was trying to explore was, you know, essentially appeals to interest. What type of economic relief? What type of future investments? What are all the ways in which a mutually beneficial outcome could be achieved that could end this war, you know, on reasonable terms, where Putin could actually benefit in the long term, you know, from that economic gain, from sanctions relief, you know, the opportunity to kind of wind back the clock and not have this be an ongoing, you know, bloodshed as it's been. And at the end of the day, Putin cares far more about being viewed as a strong man, about, you know, having a legacy that reaches back to Alexander the Great, you know, than he has anything, you know, close to a interest in what is in the best long-term interest of the Russian people.
It's to me, Peter Meyer, it looks like he's offering nothing to Ukraine. I mean, they'd have to cede territory. It would limit the Ukrainian army to 600,000. It would bar Ukraine from ever joining the NATO Defense Alliance, which Kiev says is a non-starter. I mean, it's everything that Putin would ever want so that he can go back in and finish the job. That's the terrible thing.
Yeah, and that's, I think, ultimately why everyone walked away with nothing having been achieved, unfortunately.
I don't know where they're going next, but I appreciate you very much. Quick question. I know the music's playing, but could the administration get around this complaining now that they went back and bombed the boat a second time because there were two people apparently hanging out of the boat? Not like we could go in and rescue them because we're thousands of miles away. But can't they just fix this by shooting at boats with two missiles instead of one? Nobody was complaining when they were shooting one missile and knocking out the boats. They're complaining that they went back to finish the job. So why don't they, from this point on, do two missiles at each boat, and then they won't have to worry about this?
I will just say, I think it was two missiles to start, and then they had to do another two. But the legality and ethics around, non-state quote-unquote combatants are, I think, more time than we have to go into here. You know, but clearly, you know, understanding what actually transpired, the TikTok of these events, is something that both House and Senate will be looking into.
Well, that's interesting. I had not heard that. This is the first time I heard there were two missiles the first time and then two missiles the second time. That's why we depend on you, Peter, because of your connections and your brilliance. Thanks for sharing it with us.
You're too kind, sir. Thank you very much for the time.
Peter Meyer, former congressman, Army veteran, here with Paul W. Smith in focus at WJR at 1:43. I don't know if I can find this back again. I just got something all over my phone. from Roden Track. The president is expected to announce softer fuel economy standards this afternoon. If he hasn't done so, have you seen anything, Mike? I haven't seen anything.
No.
Reportedly planned emissions walkback is aimed at easing prices for customers at dealerships, which would certainly be good news. I hope it's not too little too late after the OEMs have already
put a lot of money into that. Yeah,
what's
I
that?
Say I heard it's going to be around 3-ish this afternoon.
Oh, okay. Very good. We have Steve Mitchell on. Speaking of people we haven't talked to in a long while, he's a great guy. Steve Mitchell, a CEO of Mitchell Research and Communications. Always a pleasure, Steve. It's been too long.
It has been way too long. It's great to talk to you, Paul.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I want you to get right to it because these interviews are short. What did you come up with the early polling for the gubernatorial and Senate primaries?
Well, first of all, in the primaries, we tested the Republican primary, and these are Republican people who said that they would be voting in the Republican primary. They could be independents or Democrats. But in the Republican primary, John James has a 48% to 11% lead over Mike Cox. Tom Leonard has 5%, and Eric Nesbitt has 2%. So John James, with his name identification from two statewide races and two elections and re-elections to Congress in Southeast Michigan, is very strong there. On the Democratic side, again, 48% for Jocelyn Benson over Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist and Mayor and the Sheriff of Genesee County, Chris Swanson. So Swanson's at 5% and Gilchrist is at 12%. So both Benson and John James have huge leads. However, in the Republican primary, Mike Cox and Eric Nesbitt and Tom Leonard have all been raising a lot of money, and so that race could become more competitive. However, Gilchrist and Swanson have not raised very much money, so it looks as though Benson's going to win that one by a large margin.
Interesting, because the first time, just very quickly, Steve, when I looked at this, I said, gee, where's Mike Duggan? But, of course, it was pointed out to me by my producer. This is Mike Duggan is not in the primaries because he's an independent. So he's not in this primary, and that's why he chose to be an independent, one of the reasons, I think.
That's exactly. Well, and quite frankly, polling that we did last year and showed that Duggan simply could not win a Democratic Party primary, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why Mike made the decision to run as an independent.
Why would that be after such great success?
Well, he's had great success in Detroit, and Detroiters are aware of it. Even people in the Tri-County area are aware of it. But statewide, he doesn't have the name identification that Jocelyn Benson has as Secretary of State, for instance.
Wow.
Or Dana Nessel as Attorney General.
Right. Well, it'll be fascinating to see, but he is not in that primary, so that's why he's not on this list. But I'm happy to see that it appears that Mike Rogers is doing well in his effort to become United States Senator.
Mike's doing really well. We did not do a primary race for him because he's been endorsed by Trump, and at the time we took this poll, nobody else was in the game. So Mike Rogers will be the nominee for the Republicans. But boy, there's going to be a barn burner in the Democratic primary where you've got Haley Stevens, Congresswoman Haley Stevens, and Mallory McMorrow, State Senator Mallory McMorrow, in essentially a statistical tie. Stevens has 27%, McMorrow has 24%, and Abdul El Sayed is not too far away either. He's at 16%. So that's going to be, I think, a real very close race at the end of the day. Stevens has the lead, but not by very much. We also did some general election matchups as well in the governor's race as well as in the Senate races. And in the governor's race, we found that the strongest candidate against Jocelyn Benson was John James, and John James led 37 to 31. With 16% for Mike Duggan. Now, Benson did have a point lead over Mike Cox and a 5-point lead over Eric Nesbitt. But again, it seems to me that Duggan is pulling more Democrats away from their candidate than he's pulling Republicans away from the Republican candidate. And I think Duggan is going to be very helpful to Republicans if he stays on the ticket, which I'm sure he's going to, given the amount of support and money that he's raising.
Yeah, well, they can follow the job he has done in Detroit. And I think there are a lot of people that will be supporting him. It's fascinating. The good news is we'll be checking with you far more often now that we're in the silly season. And you keep up the good work, Steve.
I will. Great to talk to you, Paul. Have a good holiday season.
Well, we'll talk to you during this holiday season, I'm sure. Steve Mitchell, CEO of Mitchell Research and Communications Incorporated. He has his finger on the pulse on these things. Thanks again for the team's work. The team. Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Lusiginsky. What's that?
I hit the wrong button.
All right, now I'm late.
Sorry, my fault.
Danielle, I'm late because he interrupted me in the middle of my goodbye. I was going to hit the close perfectly. So stand by for JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.